Ross.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. Erica Ross on behalf of the appellant Marco Pineda. Mr. Pineda raises two issues on appeal. If I may, I'd like to start with the mid-trial removal of a juror and then address the district court's procedural errors at sentencing. On the first day of the three-day trial in this case, the district court seated a juror, Mr. Vega, with the aid of an interpreter, despite knowing full well that Mr. Vega had limited proficiency in English.
But here's the problem. The district court is thinking about Mr. Vega's proficiency in English, as far as I can tell, from the time she's considering whether to allow him to sit in the jury to the time she finally decides it's just not working. And she's under the misapprehension that the English limitations can be overcome by the use of an interpreter. And at one point she even says, well, let's just go ahead with the trial with the interpreter. It's not going to be hard to undo it because we've got the alternate here. So I don't see when she finishes. I don't see the moment at which she says Mr. Pineda is acceptable and then some later moment when Mr. Pineda is still the same man isn't acceptable. I see it as just one constant thinking about it.
I understand that, Your Honor. I think that the constant thinking about it is actually a problem in this case. The purpose of voir dire is to figure out, before we start trial, whether a juror is qualified. And so we think that the better course, and in fact the course that Rule 24 envisions, is that a judge will finally make that determination before allowing a juror to be seated. Now, in this case, I do think it was very clear.
Was this sort of the Cook County style of selecting jurors, four and four and four?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Can you repeat that?
Cook County selection of jurors, four, panel of four, panel of four, panel of four.
I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with the way that Cook County seats its jurors generally.
You don't know how this one is selected. Let me ask another question. Were the alternates seated the court?
Yes, I understand from the record. I was not the trial counsel, but my understanding is that the alternates were seated in the normal course at the beginning of trial. If I could return to Judge Wood's question, I think it's very clear that in this case the district court actually did have all of the information that she needed in front of her to make the determination at the outset of trial whether Mr. Vega's English proficiency was sufficient. The very second thing that Mr. Vega...
What difference does it make if the alternate jurors heard the same testimony? What difference?
Well, I think it makes two differences, Your Honor. The first is that, just as a general rule, I think that a defendant has an expectation that unless some unforeseen circumstance arises, he will be tried by the jury that's originally impaneled, and that here included Mr. Vega.
Yeah, but if you get one that's not qualified and the judge doesn't really understand it until she removes him,
Yes, Your Honor, but then I would move to the sort of the more case-specific reasons in this case.
Wasn't there an interpreter? As I understand it, the juror was provided with an interpreter?
The juror was provided with an interpreter for the first day of the trial, Your Honor.
Was the interpreter participating in it, or who was he, just a stranger to the proceedings they brought in and he was interpreting to the juror?
My understanding is that he was just interpreting to the juror. He was not, she in this case was not otherwise.
During the voir dire.
At times during the voir dire and at times without the voir dire. So when the voir dire began,
there was contemplated that she remain to the interpreter, she or he remained throughout the trial to interpret to the juror.
It was contemplated that that is how it would have worked had the judge not removed the juror.
Doesn't that add a 13th juror just for the heck of it? I mean, because if the interpretation is shaded, how would anybody else know?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the Tenth Circuit's decision in Dempsey is useful on this point, as is the general...
I think it's what you say is possible, but why take that kind of a chance?
Well, Your Honor, two points on that. The first is that I think the risk that an interpreter would somehow change what was being said is just incredibly...
Because words have different meanings, you understand.
Of course, Your Honor, but interpreters are regularly used and required to be used by statute when a defendant or a witness cannot speak or understand English.
This was a certified report, interpreter.
Exactly, Your Honor. That was going to be
the court. The court first, the interpreter.
I'm sorry?
The court, as she finally determined, erroneously furnished the interpreter.
Yes, it was the court's Exactly, Your Honor. It was the court's interpreter. And so the district court actually said that the juror was doing just fine with the interpreter. But if I could move back.
But could I just ask this at a higher level of generality? This juror is seated, and the judge decides after a day of trial that she made a mistake.
Yes,
now, she might make a mistake because his English isn't good enough, and now she's read Section 1865, or she might make a mistake because she thought the juror's physical condition was okay, but she observes the juror after a day in court, and it looks like he's in terrible pain, or he's falling asleep, or she makes a mistake for any of the million reasons people might make a mistake. The rules of criminal procedure allow district court judges to intervene when they think there's a problem with the jury. So why isn't that all that happened here?
Well, I think, Your Honor, it's not quite right that she first realized that there was a mistake once trial had begun. In fact, on page 109 of the transcript, she says that she's convinced that she could have removed the juror for cause, and this is before the opening statements even happen. And so the judge certainly was aware of this problem. Sort of.
She said she was convinced she could remove him?
Yes. She said at that point, I believe, that she thought that, you know, if I knew now what I knew when we were initially seating him, I would have removed him. But, you know, I'm not quite sure, so let's keep going.
But I thought at one point she actually says, I thought, right here, page, it's 212 of the transcript, A39. She says, and contrary to what I'm sure you believed but was the law yesterday, I just had never dealt with it before, but not only am I not required to seat a juror who does not speak and understand English, but the law actually goes exactly the opposite way. Under federal law, I'm not allowed to. So I read that as her saying, you know, I've now had some time to look at the statutes, and I realized that I just wasn't handling this the right way. That's why I see it as her realizing that there was a mistake.
Right.
This is on the 13th of December.
That's correct, Your Honor. The prior day, she had also made several statements that once she had seen Section 1865, which the government gave her on the first day of trial at pages 88 to 89 in the transcript, she made several statements on the first day suggesting that she knew at that point that she could remove the juror. And in fact, on page A7 of the appendix in the post-trial order, the court states that, quote, it was clear from the start of trial that Mr. Vega could not meet the requirements for jury service. And so our argument is just that knowing what she knew, the court should have dealt with the issue if she was going to deal with it at that time before allowing the first day of trial to commence. Now,
so where do you think she would have had the authority to hire an interpreter for the rest of the – I mean, at one point you argue once the mistake is made but the jury is convened and the trial's begun, you seem to argue she has a duty to keep this jury together if it's at all possible. And your proposal is, well, just continue with what's working, continue with the interpreter – looking at the Dempsey case with the hearing-impaired person, et cetera. But if there's no money in the budget, we're very sensitive to this today, where does she get the authority to hire an interpreter?
I would make a few points in response to that, Your Honor. The first is that I'm not entirely sure where the money was coming from, but this was the court's own interpreter, and so presumably she could have kept the interpreter on for the next day, really, of trial. And I think we sort of know that because the court then changed her reason for dismissing Mr. Vega. So in the post-trial opinion, the court says that its reason actually was not the lack of funding for an interpreter. And so since the court wasn't relying on that anymore, I don't think that that's...
She probably had inherent authority to hire the interpreter, but as Judge Wood pointed out, what if the interpreter gone through the whole trial? You'd have a better case now by saying you had this interpreter translating the evidence that he didn't understand.
Understood, Your Honor. I think in this particular case, we would not be able to bring that case because we did ask for the interpreter, and so we would not be able to argue on appeal that the interpreter somehow prejudiced Mr. Pineda's case. Now, I do think, if I could quickly turn to prejudice, though noting that I'm quickly losing my time here, the removal of Mr. Vega in this case was particularly disruptive because it occurred smack in the middle of cross-examination of the primary witness for the government. So this case really rose or fell on Officer Kalindris' testimony.
The alternative juror was seated right there in the courtroom, right?
That's true, Your Honor. But
closer to the witness than he probably was.
That may be right, Your Honor, but the problem is that the other jurors, as the government noted, were looking around for Mr. Vega during this testimony, and so just as the defense counsel is impeaching Officer Kalindris, the jury is distracted at the key moment for the defendant. Now, I will reserve whatever of my time I have. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Peter Salib, and I represent the United States. The district court did not abuse its discretion in excusing Mr. Vega for cause because initially and at the conclusion of the voir dires, Mr. Vega was not qualified pursuant to statute, as the court has elicited. Regarding when Mr. Vega became unqualified, he was unqualified from the beginning, and the district court...
She made a mistake by keeping him on the 12.
That's correct. And
the government objected to him leaving the juror on the...
Repeatedly, Your Honor. And initially, when there was a sidebar after Mr. Vega's initial voir dire, the court assumed we would excuse him for cause. The government made a formal motion for cause at that point. And that's when the defendant raised an issue of, well, there have been cases tried with interpreters before. And the judge took that and kind of went along with it. But at minimum, there was an initial motion for cause. When the jury was selected, there was another motion for cause by the government, which was denied. And there was a third motion for cause immediately after that. And on the fourth day, there was another motion for cause.
So I'm certainly satisfied that the government didn't waive anything here. So with all of that. But the tricky question is, once the mistake is made, and the judge has erred, I think, as she clearly realizes, by failing to dismiss Mr. Vega, she seated him as a juror. The trial is halfway through. Now we have a problem of whether the trial should be disrupted by dismissing a juror and going with an alternate, or whether there should be a mistrial and just start over again, or, you know, what's the remedy that best protects Mr. Pineda's rights?
The remedy, Your Honor, which was in place, was the alternates. There were two alternates in this case. This was a very short trial. The judges have said, the alternates were sitting in the room. They were sitting, listening to the testimony, paying attention. They clearly were instructed, as the remainder of the 12 were, to pay attention, to listen to the evidence, and they were doing so. There's no evidence that the entire jury was distracted. I'll briefly address that. So that's the remedy, to answer Your Honor's question, is the alternates is the remedy. The rules of criminal procedure allow that remedy.
Even though there was no change. I mean, Mr. Vega's English was just as bad or just as good, however you want to think about it, on day one of the trial as it was ever. And he apparently had quite honestly indicated that he didn't speak English. He wasn't trying to fool anybody.
That's correct. There was no change in Mr. Vega's ability to speak English. However, as the court has pointed out, just because there was no change does not nullify the fact that he still was not qualified at the outset. And therefore, the court would then just continue along with the error is improper. And when it decided to cure the error, it did so appropriately as soon as it came to that realization with the evening recess.
Well, there was no problem with him with the interpreter. The interpreter, I mean, federal interpreters are people of great integrity. They're screened. They are relied on for the most sensitive of evidence in criminal cases. So I don't think we have any reason to assume the interpreter was not faithfully communicating what was said.
No, not at all.
Was it contemplated that the interpreter would go into the jury room when they were deliberating on their verdict?
It was contemplated, Your Honor.
So that he would then translate, he or she would translate the discussions between and among the jurors to the illiterate voter?
That would be the case, and that would ultimately becomes the problem.
And that's what happened in Dempsey with Siner.
That's
right.
Correct.
So you have the same issue of an intermediary when it's a hearing-disabled person.
But the difference here, Your Honor, is that the interpretation would have to go both ways. In Dempsey, that juror could understand and could read lips and could discern the conversation that was going on around this juror.
But was that important to the outcome of the case? Some hearing-impaired people probably read lips better than others.
But in the context of a jury discussion, of a free-flowing discussion, that becomes a critical factor because Mr. Vega, in this case, would not be able to understand and would need the assistance of translating his own thoughts and his own discussion. So then it becomes an 11-person translation going to one interpreter, and that would clearly disrupt the deliberations and, as Judge Kaney said, inject a 13th person into the jury. That situation would not be present in Dempsey.
Were there other Hispanic members of the jury?
In the 12, Judge? To my recollection, as trial counsel, there was not. There was not in this case.
I thought the record showed he was the only Hispanic
juror that was selected. That is correct. If again, the record in my memory serves correctly. But that would be the problem of injecting the interpreter all the way through the trial and through the deliberations. And the court clearly cured that problem when it did dismiss Mr. Vega for cause after the government's repeated motions. If there are no further questions,
thank you.
The government does ask the court to confirm the conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Too much time. You had your time has run out, but I'll give you 2 minutes.
Just briefly, I would just make 2 points. The first is that the government has now conceded that there was no change between the time that Mr. Vega was seated and the time that he was removed. And we would note, as we do in the briefs, that this court, I'm aware of no case from this court or really from any other court in which the removal of a juror mid-trial, absent any change in circumstances relating to that juror, has been
approved. I can give you one. There was one in this fairly recently in the court where a governor is being tried, former governor. And they pulled a juror out in the middle of deliberation.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe you're referring to the Warner case.
Yeah.
But in Warner, we would submit, as we did in the briefs, that there actually was a change because voir dire had not revealed anything about the...
Well, it wasn't a change. They had already committed the crimes that they denied, but...
It came to
came
light,
to light.
Yes. In the middle of the trial, however.
Exactly, and I apologize, Your Honor,
for...
We all
remember.
Yes, for misphrasing that. It came to light during the deliberations.
That's a way to correct the problem. I mean, there is a way to correct the problem. That's to remove the juror and use the alternate. If you didn't have any alternates, then you're out of luck unless you agree to go with less than 12 jurors.
Yes, Your Honor, that is one way, but... In this case, it could have been avoided from the beginning because the judge knew about the issue, whereas in Warner, it had not come to light at that point. My second point would just be that, in addition to the interpreter, it was also very possible to declare a mistrial in this case. As the government also noted, this was a very short trial. There had only been one day of testimony at the time when all of this occurred. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
And, counsel, you were appointed, and your firm was appointed. You did a very fine job. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement and will be in recess. Be in recess.
I think we actually will be in business tomorrow.
No.
I'm not sure.
Well, we'll be in recess for your swearing in, I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, not in recess for your swearing
in. Not in recess, but I